Welcome to a new edition of Game Misconduct. I'm CT here with Dory.
Hello.
Don't forget to follow us on social media at Game Miz with a Z Conduct. And we are joined by our guest, Kaylee Chelios of the Tampa Bay Lightning, radio analyst and digital reporter and doer of all things. Welcome to the show this season, Kaylee.
Hi, thank you for having me. I'm excited to be back. It's been a little while, but it's great to be back. Appreciate it.
Yeah, no problem. We try not to, like, you know, abuse our asks and ask people to come on multiple times a season. But if you want to come on multiple times a season, we'll bring you on.
Anytime you guys want, I'm happy to.
All right. So first of all, we want to start by congratulating you on your enhanced duties this season as Lightning color analyst for the road games and some games at Amalie Arena when Phil Esposito was unavailable. We did talk to you last year when you started doing that a little bit here and there. But how has that been so far? I've loved listening to you on those road games.
Thank you. It's been excellent. So ever since I had the opportunity to do radio with Dave, and he was generous enough to allow me to join him, you know, even without the experience of doing it really prior, other than the summer that I had kind of getting ready for it, covering some of the development camps, 3-on-3 tournaments and such. And then I did some preseason games. So it's been a good journey so far. Still so much to go and a lot to learn. But after my first year down, I feel so much better. And obviously, you know, getting the experience doing all those games last season has helped me a lot more with my confidence this year. But it's just been tremendous. Working with Dave is awesome. He's so smart and so helpful, and he's so great at seeing the game, and his experience has taught me so much in a short time. So I'm looking forward to continuing to do the rest of the road games this season and working with him and Phil and kind of figuring out playoffs down the road as well. So I love doing it. It's been a goal of mine, and to get to do it covering the Lightning and working with Dave has been an exceptional opportunity for me.
So you're fantastic being a digital reporter, and like we said, we think you're doing a tremendous job. But they each take a different skill set. Can you talk about the differences in those different skill sets and kind of just how you're so able to quickly pick up and just dominate everything you do, basically?
Oh, thank you. I wouldn't say that, but I appreciate the support. But you know what? It is different. I think from hosting to reporting to doing color commentary, it's all a different skill set. I think when I first started, you know, working in journalism when I was in school, you know, I had an idea watching TV. I thought, you know, I always wanted to be someone who could be more of in the analyst role. Like, that would be cool. Normally you just see a lot of former players, which makes sense because that's exactly who you want to hear talk about, you know, the game and experiences. But you kept on seeing more and more different types of people who didn't necessarily have extensive NHL careers or even played really that much at all, if at all, in the NHL, like, a, you know, on TV and being able to provide analysis. But I think for me, I always felt most comfortable on camera when I was just being asked, like, point A, or, you know, just questions about the game, breaking down a play, analyzing it, looking at it. If I just was talking hockey, it was the easiest to come for me. But I'd say hosting was a very different skill set.
Okay.
I love watching Paul Kennedy at Fox Sports do it because he just has a way with words, his transitions. And a lot of it is things that you do a lot of ahead of time, too. It's a lot of preparation when you're hosting or doing reporting. You have to get all your facts and everything ready. You need to know your players, you need to know your stats, and you kind of have to have intros and outros and different things scripted a little bit more. So if it's scripted, it's a different skill set. You kind of have to have a little bit more energy and enthusiasm, and it's a bit more rehearsed, and that requires a different skill set, maybe a little bit more memorizing unless you have a teleprompter, which I've never used. Whereas when you're doing color commentary, it's spontaneous, it's in the moment, you have to be present and have already done your prep work and hope that, you know, of the million things you wrote down, that you can use 10% of them when the game actually happens. So it's a little bit more on the fly, which I'm more comfortable with. But at the same time, it's a little bit more challenging, too, because it puts you on the spot right away with having to make a decision. And when you see a play, even without a replay, you need to make a call in that moment. So it helps you be a little bit more decisive, whereas when you're working, doing stand-ups and as a digital reporter or at the desk hosting, you maybe have a little bit more time and you know exactly what's coming to prepare for it and script it out. So I think it's amazing to be able to have your hands in everything, because nowadays it seems like that's those are the most valuable people. And that's what I was always told in school was, you know, try to get be as versatile as possible, work behind the camera, work in front of the camera, write, do everything. And we learned how to do that while I was at Medill at Northwestern. So I think that really helped prepare me to be open-minded. And it's certainly been great here getting to assist with the morning skate show, the digital side, and then, of course, the color side.
So I read an article shortly after the season started in the Tampa Bay Times that, and I'm not going to give out your age because, of course, that's rude. You don't, women don't talk about their ages. but you're a young woman. We can say that. And that you're a role model for young women who have maybe always wanted to be in a booth regardless of the sport and said, well, I want to do that. But, hey, I never see a woman or I never hear a woman doing it. And now they hear you, especially in our area, we have, you know, as you know, Kaylee, we have a lot of really knowledgeable sports fans who are little girls all the way up to, you know, even the boomer age. Women in this area are very knowledgeable when it comes to sports. And now they have you to listen to and go, hey, I can do that because Kaylee Chelios did it. And I read that you had somebody kind of a moment sort of where you said, you know, I do want to do this, but you heard somebody who's a woman who played for the U.S. national team do it. And that kind of gave you that little extra push. Can you talk about that at all? Being a role model and then who you first thought, oh, I can do this now. I heard, you know, it's acceptable, I guess.
Absolutely. You know, it's hard for me to still think of myself as a role model because, like you said, I am young and I am still fairly inexperienced. I'm still not like where I'd like to be eventually in my career, but I know that I have the opportunity. That was the biggest thing, was just getting an opportunity. And for women before me, that didn't come quite as, I wouldn't say easily, but I think it was a lot more difficult to find, you know, a space for them to be able to get into more of the in-game analysis, rinkside type roles because they were predominantly male dominated. And there was a lot of former players that, you know, were more on that side of things. But I watched AJ Molesko in the playoffs two seasons ago, I believe it was. And she was kind of my trigger where I was watching the game. She was doing the Predators game, that whole series for the Preds. I think it was Preds Winnipeg. And she was, you know, it just didn't occur to me at first while I was watching the game that there was a woman doing color. I assumed maybe it was going to be like a sideline or ringside role. And then as I kept listening, I was like, oh my gosh, like that's AJ Molesko. She's doing like the first woman to do the Stanley Cup playoff in a color commentary role. So for me, that kind of initially snapped in my head. I was like, okay, if she's doing it, like I want to be able to do it. There is a space for it. If you can do it. My thing now is the reason I say I don't think of myself as a role model is because I still have so much more I want to learn. And, you know, the men that I work with right now and Dave Mishkin and a lot of the other play-by-play and color analysts, those are guys who have been there for so long and have done it for such a long time. But that doesn't mean you can't do it just because you're younger, you're a woman or whatever. If you're good at your job, I think that'll come through. And if you're not, that'll come through too. So that's where you kind of get the pressure put on you when you're in these or when you have these opportunities. But I think it's amazing. And I want to work as hard as I can every day to be able to provide more opportunities for young women if they do see me in that role. It's hard to see myself there, but, and it's also hard when I look at players like AJ Molesko and Cassie Campbell and the other women, Botterelli, Bridget for the Islanders. You know, they've done so much and accomplished so much, you know, in their national careers representing Team USA and Team Canada. So it was an honor to be able to join the women at TSN last year as well, doing the women's rivalry series between USA and Canada, and that was pretty cool. So I'm learning a lot on the go, but it is amazing. I think the more you see women and you see people that you can relate to and understand in the roles that you want to be in, the more tangible they feel, and it inspires you and it encourages you to want to do that. So I think you have to do your work and you know, do the best you can to not only represent yourself, but to represent women in a sphere where they're slowly starting to integrate more and more, and it's a great thing to see women in the space.
Yeah, and we've definitely seen more women hockey in hockey in media, and the, you know, implementation of integrating some of the, you know, women in the All-Star weekend even last year. I you know, CT and I were really excited to see that, you know, because sometimes I think, and I don't want to get on a soapbox about it, but, you know, sometimes I think when it comes to media, they expect you to kind of do one certain role. And anytime you see women break out of that and do what the men are doing, I always think, hey, that's awesome. But let's talk about the last week of hockey now that we've gotten over our talking about you on the radio, which we both are really big fans of listening to you. We love your digital. We love your reporting. We really do think you just do a phenomenal job. But let's talk about hockey. So Nashville is one of those teams that has given the Lightning fits over the last 2 years or so. They're one of the teams that I always get nervous when I see them on the schedule. But they come away with an overtime win at Bridgestone Arena. You were there. It ended a three-game skid, which I think, you know, really was, I don't want to say a statement game this early in the season, but I thought it maybe gave them a lot of, you know, good, you know, a little bit of confidence boost. But the one thing that I really noticed was that the vets, the core players on the team really seemed to click and be in sync in that game. Is that a fair assessment from where you were sitting watching the game?
Absolutely. I think that's a great way to put it. I think the core guys there, the leadership group, they were, you know, extremely locked in, extremely focused, especially with some of the momentum swings in that game between the, you know, 5-minute stretch on the power play in the second period that went horribly wrong. You know, they didn't allow Nashville to really get anything after that either. They didn't really give them, you know, they weren't really fueling their offense with turnovers and costly mistakes at all. And Nashville did an excellent job killing that 5-minute stretch of the major. So that was a big key part of the game, because down the road, you know, you don't want to look back in that game and the narrative be, well, we had 5 minutes of power play time and we didn't get the work done. And mm-hmm. Now Nashville is going to come back. And I think, too, coming off that Washington game, of course, the Carolina one was a stinger, but the Washington game, too, they had a 3-1 lead going into the third period. And they give up the lead and they don't win in overtime, which I think was terrible for them. I think they felt really bad about their game that night, and they didn't find it, you know, they knew it wasn't acceptable the way they were defending still, and they kind of took a step back in that game. So I think, like you said, it was kind of a statement game and a huge one for them to come away with the extra point in Nashville. And I thought you could even see that the difference in overtimes between Washington and Nashville. Yeah. It seemed like in Washington there was like even more sense of urgency on what they were doing right in overtime, and they were taking their time, but they were still, you know, on the attack. Whereas Nashville, I think they were a little bit more passive and they couldn't quite get things going for themselves. It seemed like they had a lot more confidence and they were playing with just a will to win that they didn't have in those two previous games against the Predators. And they did a fantastic job on their, you know, penalty killing, especially for the most part, without Alex Killorn as well. And I think that was difficult. And they do allow the one power play goal. I think Matthew Joseph was in the box and they give them one there. But I don't think they let anything in that game really bring them down at all. And Kucherov comes up with the big overtime winner in the locker room afterward. You could feel and see the energy and the excitement for them being able to come away with that second point. It certainly wasn't enough for them to just have the one. I think that was a game that was hard. It's a tough building to play in, and to come away with that extra point and the way they defended, which has, you know, been a point of emphasis for them throughout training camp, throughout the season, but the way they defended from start to finish, they really didn't give up much, and they really didn't give up much in the dangerous areas of the ice. Maybe there was some leaky coverage off the rush, and of course dealing with the special teams giving up 4 power plays, you never want to do that, but you know, they lost the special teams battle and they still came out with a win in a tough arena against a tough opponent. So like you said, that was a big turning point for them to come away with a win there.
We're speaking with Kaylee Chelios, a Tampa Bay Lightning radio analyst and digital reporter. Now, you mentioned that Killorn was out. He comes back Thursday for the Minnesota game. He evens it at 4-4. At that point, you know, it's kind of like that exaltation of good. They're not letting, you know, they're fighting through it. And then 8 seconds later, Matt Zuccarello scores to make it 5-4, which is the eventual final. Really, I thought that was kind of a stinger because I thought they kept fighting and fighting in that one. Now, what I want to ask you is, and I've mentioned this several times on our show over the years, that when you're in the booth or in the press box, you're way above the ice and you see things that the TV cameras don't show. You know, because they're focusing on the puck, not what's going on, you know, all over the ice there. Vasi only faced 21 shots, and he only stopped 16 of them. Now, was that an off night from Vasilevsky from your point of view? Or was there stuff that we weren't really seeing that was going on that kind of just put him in poor situations?
I think that was a little bit of an off night for Vasilevsky. To be honest, I didn't think either goaltender played at the top of their game. I think Vasilevsky, unfortunately, had some bad bounces against him, too, including the goal that went off. Eric Chernak, I think it was the one, might have been the first one right after Victor Hedman scored the power play goal, and then they come back in 30 seconds or so later, and he kind of gets a bad bounce off Chernak's foot, and the puck comes right in front, and they score there. So I think that, you know, mentally that was a very challenging game for him to come back into, giving up goals right after on the next shift. I don't think that's on Vasilevsky only. I think that was a complete lapse, mental lapse, and I think that's the word that John Cooper had used as well, to be giving up a goal that shortly after the next shift after you score a goal. And the other word he used is just unacceptable. I mean, that really can't happen in a game against that, and especially at a point now where the Lightning, they want to keep picking up these points and take advantage of home ice. So it really isn't acceptable to allow those kind of moments and plays happen, and you don't support your goalie that way. So I think Vasilevsky had a tough night in that, but I still think that he still gave his team an ability to win a game based on their ability to score four goals, even though they weren't defending as well. And they also weren't doing well on their special teams. Yeah. They were 1-for-4 on the power play, which was big, but they did well penalty killing wise, but it wasn't quite enough. So I think he felt it and he was frustrated, and you could feel the whole team at practice the next day. It was only a 35-minute practice, but they were absolutely locked in, and they had kind of another statement game against the San Jose Sharks, I would say, because of how well they defended, and Vasilevsky was locked in that game as well. So a tough night for him in net. Bounces, as he's kind of said throughout the season, haven't always gone his way. They haven't gone the team's way. They haven't got the results they wanted, but they're making progress. And they're not getting frustrated with themselves. I know John Cooper, you can't hammer the guys every day at practice when they don't get the results. And he said, as long as he's liking their play and their progress, they're a team on paper. I mean, they look like the best team in the NHL, really. Right. So once they get things going for them, I don't think they have too much to worry about. It's just a matter of not letting these little stretches, 5-minute stretches, 2-minute stretches in a game burn them. And that's been the case for them in more games than not.
We're going to take a quick break and come back with our guest, Kaylee Chelios, on more Game Misconduct.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top 5 Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911, and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
We're back with more Game Misconduct and our guest, Kaylee Chelios.
Okay, so you alluded to the coming back in the Emily Arena for San Jose, where Vasi almost had a shutout. They win that 7-1. It was like firing on all cylinders type of game. From what I could see. But is there anything specifically in that game that you saw them do that they have to be more consistent with that aspect if they want to continue seeing that kind of success?
Well, I think they've talked a lot about defending well, being better on the defensive side of the puck, and I don't think that means just managing the puck in their own zone. I think what they did really well against the Sharks, which they hadn't necessarily been able to do against some of these other Western Conference teams that are very structured, they like to clog up the neutral zone, is they backtracked and counterattacked very well. It wasn't just, they were getting in on the forecheck quickly and trying to make something of it, or when San Jose was trying to break up the ice, they were all over them in the neutral zone. It was a 5-man unit moving up and down the ice, which we haven't always seen. But when the Lightning are able to use all 5 players there defensively on the backcheck, they're such a fast, skilled, strong team. And they work so well, like counterattacking and on the rush. So when they can break them up, coming out of their zone or give them problems there, and then they come out them hard, I thought they did a great job at sustaining some offensive zone time, both against the Sharks and I think in a lot of stretches against the Nashville Predators as well. They did a really nice job at that. It starts in your own end. You have to be able to cleanly get the puck out. You have to be able to make those D2D passes and not turn the puck over. But not only were they doing that, but they didn't have to rely on them, on their D as heavily or on Vasilevsky as heavily in the dangerous areas of the ice, because they were able to get that kind of support from their forwards on the back check and then use their strengths offensively the way they like to, exactly how they like to. So they end up getting 7 goals out of it, and it's what John Cooper said at the end of the game. It makes you happy because you can see, you know, we can score these goals. We can score 4 goals, 7 goals in games where we're defending at our best as well, because it really does start on the defensive side of the puck, because it's not enough to continue to give up 2, 3, 4 goals a game and expect to come up with results, especially when you're getting every team's best, every goaltender that's played against them in some of these 1-goal games has had top-notch games. When you think about, or when you think about Binnington or Reimer for Carolina, they played absolutely outstanding in both the games against the Lightning that were decided by 1 goal. So I think that's one thing they've done really well, is just worked as a 5-man unit against San Jose, and that paid dividends for them.
And we see that a lot in the last week or so, maybe since they left for Nashville, is you see Hedman getting on the stat sheet at the end of the game. You see Sergachev, you see Shattenkirk. And I think sometimes it gets a little lost because the Lightning are such an offensive powerhouse that these guys really are the catalyst back there to kind of get everything going. And, of course, we have, you know, defensive-minded, you know, forwards like Andre Palat and Braden Point. I mean, everybody it has to be a two-way player here in Tampa Bay. So, you know, in that sense, how do you think Shattenkirk's fit in well to this system?
I think he's been a great addition. I think there were a lot of question marks at the beginning of the season, obviously, with, you know, oh, well, they want to be this defensive-minded team, and they bring in this offensive-minded defenseman. You know, how is he going to fit in? Where is he? Who is he going to play with? I think the first few games, as a whole, the defense were all trying to work on chemistry and who's going to play with who. The coaches had no idea, too. Cooper kept, you know, putting him in a blender, it seemed, just looking for anything. And I think Shattenkirk, you know, Hedman is obviously an unbelievable player. He's a one-of-a-kind defenseman. His poise, his ability to cover so much ground, the way his ability to defend, but also, you know, join the rush and contribute on offense. You kind of have to learn how to play with him. And I think Kevin Shattenkirk has done that really well. And he's still found a way to find his offensive game. He has really good instincts naturally. That's something I think that appealed to the Lightning right off the hop, even a couple of years ago when we were interested in him. And he hasn't allowed his, you know, assertiveness on offense and his decision-making to impede his ability to defend well either. You know, he's not making glaring mistakes. Mm-hmm. He's doing very well managing the puck in his own zone, and then he's able to make these plays on the rush, the decisions he's making, some of the passes he's making, even with players like Kucherov and Point. You know, he sees the game offensively, and he sees it very well. He's a creative player, so I think he's done great so far for them. His stats, obviously, he's being rewarded for his play with the goals and with the points so far. I mean, he was leading in goals in the beginning of the season, yeah, at a certain point, right up there with Steven Stamkos, and had already, you know, doubled his goal total from last year in a very short time playing with the Lightning. So I think this has been a great fit. He had a chip on his shoulder, much like the Lightning kind of had to start the season, and have to get back on the horse and do it all over again with the way they felt after playoffs. And I think Shattenkirk felt like he had so much to prove and wanted to reestablish himself and really just get respected around the league again, because I think the way things ended in New York, he was pretty, he was pretty mad about it, and understandably so. So he's done absolutely great. And I think in the locker room too, that's something that probably isn't talked about as much either because of his production as of late, but he's one of the nicest players I've been able to interact with and talk to about the game, on top of just being a great leader in the room.
All right. So we want to jump ahead to later this week, because we have two of our biggest foes that we're going to be facing, the Bruins on Thursday and then the Caps on Saturday. These two teams right now are leading their divisions. Very, very few losses for both of them. You mentioned earlier that in Washington, the Lightning lost that one in overtime, but they did beat the Boston Bruins in overtime. So these two are, these teams really fight the Lightning. The Lightning, you know, it's always a battle. looking at this Lightning team from maybe even earlier in the season, because I think Boston was in October. Looking at this Lightning team, what do they have to do to get Pat to beat the Bruins? And then what do they have to do two nights later to get past the Capitals?
Yeah, those are two of the best teams in the National Hockey League right now. I mean, the Bruins are coming off a big win, and they've been an absolute powerhouse. You know, everybody says every year they're too old to this. They've got, you know, Chara around 40 years old, ready to go, and he's leading the way for them. And up front, obviously, that top line, Marchand, Pastrnak, and Bergeron, the way Pastrnak's kind of exploded this season has been incredible to watch as well if you're a Bruins fan. So, I mean, these are two really good teams, two really good tests. I think the Lightning at times this season when they've had to play top teams, particularly in the Eastern Conference, they've definitely risen to the occasion. Boston is just, I mean, they've got everything. They've got defense, they've got the goaltending, and of course they've got this dynamic offense. So for them, you know, the biggest thing, obviously, that top line for the Bruins has proved to be troublesome, as has their power play. And for them, you know, the teams, those three players, Marchand, Pastrnak, and Bergeron, they always seem to find a way to support each other on the ice wherever they are. When one's forechecking, the other two are right there, kind of outlet passes. There never seems to be just one on an island like that, which is a lot easier to defend. So I think they're going to have to play one of their best or better defensive games against that team. And penalties has continued to kind of consistently been an issue for them. So staying out of the box, obviously, is going to be key for them against that team. I believe Boston scored 3 or 4 power play goals, but the Lightning end up coming up on top of that one, despite losing the special teams battle there, which is also another statement for them. That's going to be a really tough game. And then to follow up again with Washington, who are, again, one of the most complete teams. They've got the physicality. Their forecheck is one of the most difficult to defend against because they're big and they're fast and skilled. They have players that can burn you. So they're going to have to be prepared from the start. And much like Boston, it's another one of those teams where special teams can make or break you. So they're going to have to be sharp against both teams. And again, if they take care of their own end first, and they continue to do all the little things from the attention to detail on their own end, I think that's when they've had the most success. And that's paid off too for them offensively.
Okay. Now, Kaylee, before we let you go, I have to ask you, I don't think fans are necessarily hitting the panic button yet. I know that, you know, we certainly aren't. Do we know this team's identity yet? And I've also mentioned several times that, you know, this team, meaning the Lightning, are still three games, fewer games played than these guys that are ahead of them on, when you look in the standings, just because of the trip to Sweden. So everything was a little thrown off. So other teams have already got, you know, X amount of games, and the Lightning are still, you know, a couple games back. So it's not time, I don't think, to hit the panic button. But do we know do they know what their identity is yet this season? And what is the number one thing that if you could go in there and say, guys, I need you to do this, what would be the number one thing you want to tell them to improve on?
I think John Cooper has said it too a lot, and there's been times even when I'm sure it's been a little frustrating for the coaching staff, is their identity really hasn't changed much from last season. I think it's a different team. I think we were seeing, you know, in the beginning of the year defensively, trying to find the right pairings. Offensively, they were in a blender trying to find some chemistry between different line mates. But at the end of the day, I think their system and their structure is essentially the same as last season. They still always find a way, regardless of the turnover, maybe to keep those core assets intact. And that's exactly what they've done this season. I think they've made some improvements as well, or, you know, in the absence of players like Girardi and Callahan and Stroman, who are big leaders, they've kind of filled that with a veteran, great leader and backup goaltender in Curtis McElhinney, and players like Kevin Shattenkirk, great leader, Pat Maroon coming off a Stanley Cup championship and a very well-respected player around the league for his leadership, and he's just such a team guy. So I don't think that they've lost their identity at all. If you look even at their last few games, with the exception of the San Jose Sharks game, I mean, Minnesota, Nashville, Carolina, Washington, St. Louis, all those games were one-goal games, decided by just a goal. So I think in the beginning of the year, if you want to compare it to last season, you know, things were just going right for them all year last year. I mean, they were down 4-1 in games, and it was still terrifying for the other team to have to come out and start the third period because the Lightning always found a way to get in it. They had the best power play, you know, in the league, and it was you know, Braden Point, Kucherov, Stamkos. They just had that trio there that went off last season. I mean, you've got a Vezina, a Norris Trophy, a Hart, a Ted Lindsay. You've got everything. You know, when you look at paper, I think, you know, this is an outstanding team on paper, and I think this year is the year where they're facing adversity, and you won't know if it's good, but I think for them, they feel like it's good because of what happened last season, not facing any, and then not knowing what to do from a coach's and player's standpoint when things weren't working. That did not happen last season for them. And this season, it's been happening a lot, and it's been a tough task having to not get frustrated in some of these one-goal games where, you know, they're getting grade-A scoring chance after scoring chance, and they're not executing like the game in Carolina, but it was the two-minute, you know, spare, or it was the first period as a whole where you let three goals in, you know, needlessly and uncharacteristically that burned them. So I think they're learning, and they're continuing to take steps in the right direction as far as their defensive game. It's just a matter of getting confidence. You know, when their special teams are on, this team is on, and they're extremely dangerous to play against. But I think they're going to be one of those teams. You know, it may be tight in the playoff picture. It may be tight, too. Obviously, last year was so far from it. This season, I think it might be a lot tighter trying to get into the playoffs. But when they peak and when they really get on their game and they start rolling with a lot of confidence, and they've got a Vezina, obviously, caliber goaltender and winner from last season, and Andrei Vasilevskiy, I think they're probably going to be one of the scariest, if not the scariest, teams to have to run into at that time when they're at the top of their game. So I don't think there's any reason to panic. Yes, I think they'd like to have gotten some of these points that they've missed out on, like the Minnesota game or the Carolina game. They'd love to get those games back, but moving forward, I think they're starting to trend in the right direction if they can just stay healthy.
Well, Kaylee, we love all your insights. Please remind everybody where they can find you on social media, and then when they can hear you and where they can see your digital reports.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm on Instagram and Twitter, mostly Twitter, for all things Lightning and updates and newsworthy things. I'm on Twitter, just my name, Kaylee Chelios. You can look me up there, and I'll try to bring you up to date with all the latest surrounding the Bolts. And I'll be doing the game on radio with Dave Mishkin for all Lightning road games and some home games if Phil Esposito is unable to do so. So you can tune into every road game and hear Dave and I break down the game and do the call.
Thank you so much, Kaylee. All right, hang out. We'll be back with more Game Misconduct.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
Welcome back to Game Misconduct. I'm CT here with Dory.
Hi.
And you can follow us on social media, mostly Twitter, at Game Miz with a Z Conduct. And just had Kaylee Chelios on. That was an awesome conversation. I love hearing her talk about hockey.
And she's so humble.
I know.
And she's always been so humble. And we've seen
gracious
her
to us.
Yeah, she's always been amazing. And we've seen her kind of, you know, when she first got here to where she is now,
mm-hmm.
and the growth. She's always been knowledgeable. We've always said that. She mm-hmm. really knows her stuff.
She's just flourished.
And yeah, and just she's thriving right now.
Mm-hmm.
And she's fantastic. And the things she sees mm-hmm. and remembers, the little tiny details about games is just, it really is. I know she's very humble about it, but she really is doing a wonderful job.
And she's got some great teachers, too.
Yeah.
Dave Mishkin. Phil Esposito, I mean, to be a fly on the wall, went up in that booth to learn some things would be amazing. And and Dave's invited us up there a bunch of times to sit in, and we just haven't done it yet.
You know, every time I go by, it's so jammed in there.
It's so small.
Yeah.
Small little area.
And I always feel like I'm in the way. But, you know, the other thing is, and we've said this, because we have Dave on.
Once a year.
And you know, he's such a kind person that I think if you had the chance to work with just about anybody to be, you know, in radio, in hockey, working with Dave Mishkin is a great gig.
Yeah. And, you know, kind of, I don't want to put words in her mouth, but kind of what she alluded to is that she always made sure she was ready for any opportunity.
Yeah.
And when it came along, she was ready. Yep. She was there. She was like in the batter's box, ready to go. You know, mm-hmm. she did her studying, you know, she's, you know, learned the team. And I think, you know, kind of being ready, preparing yourself for any opportunities that may arise is not necessarily you creating that opportunity, but you just being prepared for any door that may open.
Yeah.
And I think that's kind of what I've always tried to do.
There's only, you know, however many teams in the NHL,
right?
And there's only two teams or two, you know, there's 30 whatever markets, and there's only, you know, two national whatever broadcasts that actually carry these, you know, the opportunities aren't...
There aren't a lot of opportunities.
There aren't a lot. You have to capitalize on them.
Yep.
And I think her work ethic,
her
knowledge, her understanding
of the game,
have all... And she's a great person. And all those things, you know, when the door comes, creaks open, you got to bust through it.
Yeah, she's always so well-spoken, too. So if you haven't caught her calling, doing color with Dave Mishkin on a road game,
you better
tune in this week because she's awesome.
She is.
All right. So what do you want to talk about? Because I was on a cruise ship for a week and they didn't carry the games. It was driving me crazy.
I will say that I was, as ever, you know, I say it all the time that there are some teams that I just look at. There's three in particular, right? Nashville.
Mm-hmm.
For some reason, Minnesota. Don't know why that is. And then the BBs. And... So I was so excited. I was elated when they beat the Predators in overtime.
Yeah.
Like they just won the Stanley Cup elation.
Oh,
like,
wow.
Beyond a normal, like this is how a normal normal person functions. Because it's just for 2 years, they have not beaten them since January 2018.
You were a little extra, huh?
Way extra. And I was like, yeah, got it, boys. Like I was... Yeah, it was like the dog's freaking out.
Yeah.
Like, what's the problem here, Ma? I mean, the whole nine yards. So I was so excited. I felt it was such a great win. And then, honestly, that Matt Zuccarello had to ruin it in Minnesota because I'm telling you, when Killorn scored to even the equalizer,
yeah.
I was like, yep, feeling good about that. Okay, never mind. It was just so quick. And you never want to see those things. And I think, you know, Kaylee mentioned it. Like, those are just, they're killers.
Yeah.
You can't come back and let a goal happen that quickly when she even brought it up. The three goals allowed in like 2 minutes, again, you know, against Carolina.
It's a backbreaker.
You can't set yourself up for those situations.
Mm-hmm.
And the one thing that we did mention a few weeks ago is, you know, last year, nothing was going wrong for them. I mean, we would come in here, do our show in our studio and go, I mean, these guys can't win if they try.
Right.
And that's how it felt a lot of times last year. That it
They can't lose if they try.
Sorry. Yeah. They couldn't lose if they tried to.
Right.
And, you know, it was lucky bounces. It was the hockey gods looking down on them. It was, you know, officials kind of over, maybe, you know, not catching certain things they should have caught that would have put them in a bad situation. It was just everything was going correct, going well for them for 82 dang games.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, this year we're seeing the flip of that. But I love the fact that she brought up that all these losses that they have that of late are only one game. There were only one goal. And what is that? That's a bounce.
Yeah.
That's a whoops, a misstep. That's these tiny little things that if you clean up.
The little details.
Little details, you can turn this thing around. And I don't think it's time to hit the panic button.
No, yeah. I mean, you even said turn this thing around. I don't think we need to turn the ship around at all.
No.
I think we're on the right course. Yeah. There are just little things that we maybe need to, you know, scrub the deck a little
bit.
You know, put a little paint. I was on a boat, so now I'm using the boat reference.
All right, we can do that. We can
scrub the deck a little bit, you know, put a little fresh paint on something here and there, you know, kind of thing.
Get the sails up and smooth sailing.
There you go.
There you go. Hoist the sail. I don't know what you
mean. I don't know. I wasn't on a sailboat.
Oh.
What do I look like? I was on a cruise ship. there were a lot of Boston fans, by the way, on that cruise ship.
Why?
I don't know. It's Florida. They want to get out of the snow.
We'll leave it at that.
They were very nice. I actually chatted up some of them. Because I was wearing my Lightning shirt on the boat, and they were like, and they were wearing their Boston shirts on the boat, and I was like, hey, and they were like, hey, I'm like, coming for you.
Yeah.
We're coming for you. But yeah, I think you're right. And I think I got back on land the morning of the San Jose game, and I had seen that, you know, it'd been kind of a rough week. Mm-hmm. And then I'm watching the San Jose game unpacking, and I'm like, who is this team? Like, it was just crazy.
We've seen it earlier this season as well.
Once in a while, just everything clicks.
And you're just like, here we go.
That's a team with Brent Burns, with Erik Karlsson, yeah, with all these amazing players. And I'm like, what is happening here?
And the Sharks are a good team.
They are.
And it's always a great matchup. The Lightning have had their number last few meetings.
Yeah.
And because they're in the West, they don't meet them as much. But, you know, we were really hoping, you know, you and I, oh boy, bringing this nonsense up. I can't even believe I said it. I'm really looking forward to a Lightning San Jose final.
Yeah. Shut your mouth.
We'll never say that again.
No.
Because now you got me thinking like I'm the one that the reason it all went down didn't happen. But they're such a fun team to play. And when you see the Lightning on all cylinders like they were Saturday, it's like we are unstoppable.
Yeah. It's got to be frustrating for them, though. For those games that they did lose, that they would want back, the Minnesota game where they'd want the points, you know, the Carolina game. Where, mm-hmm. And then they have a showing like they did against San Jose where it was just lights out.
Yeah.
Domination.
It's got to be. And Kayleigh even said, you know, when they, you know, a game like Nashville that they win in overtime where they don't, you know, traditionally, you know, the last couple of years haven't gone their way against Nashville. Yeah, it's a little bit of a confidence booster. And then you go right into Minnesota, and she didn't say this, I'm adding this part in, but you go into Minnesota and then you lose, you know, in the final minutes of the game, 8 seconds after Killorn's back and equalize. It's a killer. And
Killorn.
But, you know, and then to come back, and I think what we need to, I don't want to see the consistency of inconsistency.
Consistently again. Inconsistent?
Yeah, I don't want to see it again.
Yeah. I don't think they do either.
No, of course not. I'm afraid that if we don't, I don't want to say I'm hitting the panic, but I'll say this. This week is a big one. And we'll see next week when we're on the air, you know, how they came out. And I think that this week, specifically Boston and Washington, how those games play out, I think will determine the rest of the year. And I know it's a little early to say that, but now we're getting into mid-December here.
I know.
And I don't care what Corey Long says. I'm not waiting for the All-Star.
I'm not waiting for the All-Star game either, and I don't think they are either.
No.
You can see that they're, you know, they might have a slide here or there, and then they come back and they just dominate, where it's just an amazing showing of force by them, of them executing their will. And that's what we saw last year. They would come out and just decide that they were going to shut down that period.
Yeah.
They came out and decided that they were going to win the game. Mm-hmm. I haven't really seen that much this year. And I'm hoping we're getting there.
I hope so too.
And it was interesting. She says, well, I don't think the identity's changed that much. You know, we've had a lot of people on who have said that this is a different team. It is a different team. I don't think the identity has changed, though. And I think she's right. It is a different team. You have different players. You have different people slotted in here and there. But the identity is the same. They want to win.
Yeah.
You know, and this is how they're going to do it. They're going to be fast. They're going to have snipers. They're going to be scoring. They're going to be off defensively, you know, minded.
Yep.
And working on their special teams and their, you know, when all that stuff clicks, that's the Lightning we know. And I feel like some of those, maybe one thing here hasn't been clicking at a game and we're like, who is this team? No, it's the same team. It's just one thing is not working for them right now.
Right. And it is at least, I don't want to say testament, but maybe that's the way to put it. A testament that they didn't win the special teams game, the, you know, side of it on against the Nashville Predators. Mm-hmm. And they still won in overtime.
So In Nashville.
And that's why, you know, you look at these one losses in OT and all of a sudden you're like, you know what? So close. Eventually those so closes are going to catch up to them, I think.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I think.
Yeah.
But I we'll see what happens next week.
Yes.
You know, what reliving the last week, knowing that it's a tough week. It really is.
I need a drink. So one thing I did want to talk about before we go is that I had a lot of time on the ship because I went on a cruise by myself for a week.
Okay. See, I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah. By myself for a week.
Okay.
You were going to be worried I was going to be like like kidnapped by pirates and stuff.
Listen, it's a she'll never let listen, it happens. That's all I'm going to say.
Well, I made it back safely.
You did.
I never actually got off the boat in port. I know, that's why I didn't tell you.
Because I think the last cruise, the last cruise I went on, I was like, please be careful.
Don't get kidnapped by pirates was a text. Was a text from you. Yes. So that's why I didn't tell you. So I had a lot of time to myself. A lot of time to myself. I was like, oof, that's a lot of quiet. But it was nice. But I did listen to a bunch of podcasts. And I caught up on the Dan Girardi podcast.
Yes.
So good. If you are not listening, all right, first of all, thank you for listening to ours.
Yes.
But you also need to listen to the Dan Girardi Block Party podcast.
Go back and listen to the Ryan Callahan episode.
The Ryan Callahan episode was epic. The Bobby the Chief Taylor one and Vinny LeCavalier when they both coach on the same, on their son's teams.
Yes.
It's fantastic.
It is.
It's so interesting.
It's great.
And you know, like, Dan Girardi, I liked him when he played for New York, and when he came to play for us, I was so excited. Yeah. You know that. And so he's kind of a jokester. He's a really funny guy. But what I didn't realize is that how much of a stickler he is for a schedule.
Oh, my gosh. He's really, like, I mean, if you guys listen to back, they talk about, like, if he's going to pick you up for practice back when he was playing, if he was going to pick you up, you better be outside waiting for him.
Yeah.
Because he will leave you.
Right. And like if you were going to leave the hotel at the same time together to get to practice or a game, like if you weren't there, he would go without you.
He would just leave.
Yeah. I didn't realize he was such a stickler for a schedule and like he plans like and I think they're doing a great job.
Yeah.
So if you have not listened, do yourself a favor. Go back and start from the beginning. The first one was so funny because I guess they were recording outside somewhere, but probably by the Davis Island Airport, and like planes were just flying over.
It is so entertaining.
It is. And it's a really interesting look into the lives of hockey players with a hockey player asking the questions.
Right.
Seth Kushner is his co-host, and he does a great job driving the bus.
Yeah, he does.
So, like, they're both, they've got so many great questions, and, you know, it's just a different vibe when you sit down with somebody that you know so well. Like, the Ryan Callahan one was
so
epic.
Funny.
I didn't
so
know,
great.
I mean, I didn't realize Dan Girardi was, like, a huge, like, EDM music guy.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I don't know,
and
man.
That Ryan, who knew, like, Ryan and his lovely wife were such, like, Halloween junkies.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you guys have to listen.
It's so good. So, it's highly recommended. Two thumbs up. Right?
Yes.
If we had an Oprah's book club, it would be on our book club.
It would be on our book
podcast club?
Podcast club.
There we go.
So,
and they're short episodes too. So like, yeah. You know, if you're driving home in rush hour in Tampa Bay, it'll take you all the way home because it's usually about 30 minutes or so.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So definitely check it out. And Dory, anything you want to add this week before we go?
Nope. I think we're, you know, I'm looking forward to this week. A little nervous about it, but I really want to see how these guys perform on the ice.
It's going to be a good test.
Yeah.
And we've had such good feedback from the podcast, from the episode with Dr. Gil Rivera that ran last week.
Yeah.
We really appreciate all the lovely, kind words and feedback.
Yeah.
And, you know, if there's anybody that you want us to have on in the same vein, a trainer, somebody in the front office or anything like that, please reach out to us, tweet us at @GameMizWithAZConduct. And we'll definitely, cause you know, we like to have some of the same people on every year, but then also we like to switch it up a little bit. Mm-hmm. And sometimes we're like, we're ripping our hair out. Like, who can we have on? So you'd
That's
be helping us.
That's interesting. And people want to listen to.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. And different.
Yeah.
I mean, when you think about it, a hockey team dentist is a very busy person.
Yeah.
Kind of integral to the game. And, you know, all those press photos that they always take at the beginning of the season. So thank you so much for all your kind words and feedback. And like I said, if you have anything you want to tell us or ask us at @GameMizWithAZConduct on Twitter. Other than that, we'll catch you next week.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top 5 Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.